Lake Effect Weekend continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. Artist Lydia Deemer and writer Raylee Hanek have a thing for large bodies of water. Deemer and Hanek are the current artists in residence at The Bubbler, which is a Madison Public Library creative space. It gives artists a way to work directly with patrons. Their water-inspired project is called The Office of Oceanic Feeling. The title comes from the French writer Romain Rolland. He coined the term oceanic feeling as a way to describe the feeling of being one with the universe. In this edition of Radio Chipstone, Deemer, Hanek, and contributor Jennifer Fields discuss the ocean as a place of myth, magic, and tragedy.
I think that we're interested in the ocean as an actuality, and then the ocean as a place in the imagination, too, as a metaphor. And it's about as expansive a metaphor as you can find, I guess. So on one level, we're asking people to bring in their own memories, associations, reflections upon their experiences in oceans or just in bodies of water where you can't necessarily see the other shore. That's one of the archives that we're building, is people's thoughts about that. We're really interested in what that means, what oceanic feeling means as an experience, how it might inform a way of relating to political action, how it might relate to ideas of community, ideas of space, ecology.
So Riley, you come at it from a writer's point of view, while Lydia, you come at it from a maker's point of view. As a maker, what influenced you and what media did you use to express that?
I am someone who comes from an environment that was constantly in flux. I grew up in a house that was being built and unbuilt, and it was surrounded by a forest and an old disused quarry. And so my starting point is almost always looking to the things that surround me, whether those things are touched and manipulated or made by humans, or they're very unmanipulated, augmented, and even part of what we might call nature with a capital N. I think a lot about how things influence my actual aesthetic choices and also how my surroundings influence that. And so in this space, I'm making things with different patrons, but I'm also looking around myself across the street, outside the windows, picking things up off of the floor, materials that are part of the library, that are part of the project, both in a sense of how I can find them, but then also how I can change them. I don't know if you've ever heard of an idea called vibrant matter, but at the core of this project, I would say we're thinking a lot about how matter could potentially have agency, not just humans, not just animals, not just plants, but also the things that surround us. And that matter is something that we consider as it connects the people who come into the space to make art with us, but also as it connects as a composition in an installation or on a table. We have this ongoing assemblage that allows people to reconform and rearrange all of the objects that are there and really have a connection with those materials as well.
What you're asking people to do is build an object based on their own narrative.
I think that's definitely part of what we're hoping will happen. Very much trying to avoid telling a single story about what the ocean is, what it means, where it goes, what it's used for. There are so many different facets to it that, yeah, the sort of hubris that we would be taking on and doing that would be bonkers. But we're looking for this to be participatory, obviously, and we're looking for it to be about this relationship between both looking and making and embedding yourself in the process of what this is, as opposed to just coming in and sort of, you know, observing.
So would you say that there are objects or there are, I don't want to say, maybe recurrent themes when you're talking to people about creating their own idea of what the ocean is?
One of the things I've noticed the most, especially in the writing, has been related to almost like the moment someone travels somewhere for the first time, and that travel sometimes was driven by the chance to see the ocean or a large body of water, but it was also often bound up with a larger family or personal history that is more complicated than just the chance to swim or the chance to ride on a boat. And that seems to emerge. The other thing, especially with contributions that have been part of the making, the visual making, the drawing, is that different ideas of plants and animals, especially as children, have a fascination, I think, with those. They have a different connection with that kind of life at a younger age. It just pops out all different kinds of knowledge that you wouldn't expect that they can draw and actually articulate in that visual form. We, in the middle of Wisconsin, have, I think, not only lots of lakes, but we have this long geological history that surrounds us as well. And I think that we're not exactly interested in actually representing in a way of miming what that is, but we're really interested in looking at component parts and to allow kids to think about crystals and rocks as well, and to imagine, and not just kids, but adults, to imagine what was that long ago history? What did the shape of the state look like, you know, thousands of years ago? And that gives us something to start with, but that's also part of what's being shared with us in these stories that are being told. That desire to go to the shore to see the accumulations that might emerge on a beach.
I think one of the things that has clarified itself while we've been here more for both of us is there's the side of the oceanic that is wonderment, and then there's a side of it that is unsettling at the least and terrifying and monstrous. And it depends on who you are, and it depends on your experiences. And one of the things that, you know, the ocean has been part of is not just sort of like the commerce of the seas, but, you know, the transportation of human beings. And we want that to be part of what we're trying to say is part of this impossible to get your arms around story. And the hard part of it is that it's not, the question of representation in that lens is very fraught. And so for me, the thing about hearing someone's trauma is that this is somebody telling you about it who's not interested in writing it down. It's very much part of the work and what has happened in here, but it's also invisible. And I think that and clearly part of what's horrific about the oceans is that there's an invisible side to it. I'm thinking particularly of the Middle Passage, that we don't want to have this sort of Disney version necessarily of the ocean. So what does one do with that? And I think the best I've come up with is to look for voices that have sought to articulate that, because it's not my voice that's going to probably have the best phrase around that.
One of the things that we are doing, not only in sourcing other written references and writers and thinkers, and also visual resources, whether it's Ellen Gallagher's work or Cecilia Vicuña, who has done amazing installations in relationship to the sea, but we're allowing some of what happens in this room, the dialogue that actually emerges. I would actually say one of the things about being in a public library as opposed to an art space is that you actually hear a different conversation than almost any other art space I've worked in. And I find that although there are times where it's very challenging or hearing something traumatic or reading or seeing something someone has shared with us like that, it can be very difficult, but it's also activating the space. It's activating what is possible and actually a sort of constellation that can emerge from the project that reaches outward, that might be as expansive as it could keep growing for quite some time. And that potential, I really appreciate that we have this space for this time, because it is something that we can't generate. As Riley says, we may not have the words or we may not have the phrase that would best reference something that is part of our overall community and our overall collective history, but by opening the space and opening that conversation, it is possible to include it and to question and explore it.
Material culture contributor Jonifer Fields curates the Radio Chipstone series. The project is funded by the Chipstone Foundation, a decorative arts foundation whose mission is preserving and interpreting their collection, as well as stimulating research and education in the decorative arts. This week, Jonifer spoke with artist Lydia Diemer and writer Riley Hannock in Madison.